From the insane asylum, GoreHoundsOfHorror.com presents Night of the Living Dreads. I'm one half of this crazy, crazy team. We're crazy.
Crazy boy.
I don't know, man. You know where that came from, right? Planes, trains, and automobiles. I didn't know if you knew that. That John Candy in there. Yeah, it's a good flick. But anyway, I'm one half of this crazy train. I am Otis B. Dreads.
I am Malice.
That laughter you hear in the background, yes, he was jumping a gun. He's ready. This guy is ready. What is your name, sir?
Malice Murphy.
Malice Murphy. We got a great show lined up this evening. This is going to be a fun one. We got a little bit of horror news to talk about. If anybody's into collectibles, you're really going to love the article that we got lined up. That being some action figures that look like old school 1983 He-Man. He-Man action figures. Except it's not Skeletor. It's Michael Myers. That's right. We're going to get into that in just a second, but what we have lined up tonight, we're going to talk about, which goes along with one of the articles that we're going to get into, we're going to talk about the Leatherface movie that came out last year, 2017. We both watched it not that long ago. It's still pretty fresh in our heads. We took notes. We did all those, you know, responsible adulting things that you do. And it turns out we weren't very impressed. We'll get into that, though. And then later on, and it's not going to happen, I don't think, every week. It just so happened to happen, you know, our maiden voyage, episode one of Night of the Living Dreads. The movie and our main topic are going to go pretty much hand in hand. It really is. And it wasn't really on purpose that I can remember, but it just so happens. We're going to talk about Leatherface. Like I said, they came out last year, 2017. Then our main topic, Edward. What's his middle name?
Theodore.
Edward Theodore Gein. From Plainsfield, Wisconsin. Yes. We're going to get into that. We're going to talk about that. This is a very strange individual. And most episodes, in fact, probably all of them, unless something special comes up, we're going to feature a serial killer. Is that odd? Do you think it's odd that people really are intrigued by serial killers? Because I have been. It started with Dr. Kevorkian. Remember him, Dr. Yes. Suicide, the assisted suicides? That intrigued the hell out of me. Does that mean I'm like crazy or something? I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't. Okay. Well, all right. I mean, case solved then. No, go ahead, brother.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I feel the same way. But, you know, weird is good in my book.
Weird is very good. Yes. And just as good as this coffee I'm sipping on. Very good. Anyway, Weird is good, and I you know what really attracted me to serial killers was how they thought. How did they become, you know, the vicious killers, the cannibals, you know, whatever their thing was? How did they become that? You know, how did they go from, and your father had two beautiful twins and soon to be expecting a little girl. You know, you look at your little boys there and, you know, you think one day this little sweet boy could be a serial killer. You ever, is that weird? Do you ever think about anything like that?
I think about that shit all the time. Am I going to lay down one night and wake up to a shotgun in my face?
Right, right. Like a little, you know, human Chucky. You know, right there, ready to, you know, take you out. But, you know, I mean, you look at how sweet they are, and your twin boys are very sweet. And you look at them, and then you think, that could be the next Ted Bundy right there. That could be the next Jeffrey Dahmer right there. And it just kind of makes you wonder a little bit, how did these vicious killers become that way? And that's what intrigued me about them. That made me want to know more about them. Not because I glorified the macabre, which I do now in film, but not because I glorified their actions. Just I wanted to know more about them. How did they get that way? You ever think about that? Wonder how some of the most vicious killers that we know of, one we're going to speak of tonight, how did they get that way? Which we're going to dive into that as well with Ed Gein, but with other serial killers you may not be so familiar with. You ever wonder that?
Yeah, I've always wondered, you know, what's pushed them to the limit.
Right. Because something had to and we're going to get into, you know, what pushed Ed Gein to the limit, but something had to push a lot of these other killers that we'll get into in future episodes. Something had to push them to that limit. What was it? Was it an alcohol, drug addiction? Was it environmental? There's probably so many factors involved that, well, you know, it could be a whole conglomerate of, you know, things going on there. We are going to take a quick little break, and boy, do we have a little pleasure for you during the breaks. I've been on an Alice Cooper Welcome to My Nightmare kick this evening. Maybe I call it preparing for the podcast. You like that album, Malice?
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely. All right. See, Murphy approves. So, this message has been approved by Malice Murphy. Two thumbs up. Malice Murphy for president. Anyway,
I'm not a crook.
I'm not a crook. but I thought it would be kind of cool, and of course we can't do this all the time due to, you know, royalties and things of that nature, but while we are small, I think we can do this. We're going to play some tunes off of Welcome to My Nightmare, the first one being Years Ago. We'll be right back. Night of the Living Dreads, GoreHoundsOfHorror.com. Stay tuned.
Here I go again, up and down alone. All my friends went home years ago. All my toys are broken, and so am I inside, Mom. The carnival has closed years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm a little boy.
No, I'm a great big man.
No, let's be a little boy. For a little while longer, maybe an hour.
No, Stephen, you have to go back now.
Isn't that our mom calling?
All right, we are back. Night of the Living Dreads, nightofthelivingdreads.com. That's D-R-E-D-S, not E-A. And this podcast brought to you by gorehoundsofhorror.com. That was that song that we played right there is one. It's off of Welcome to My Nightmare, Alice Cooper. And I think there's a few songs on there that's actually pretty damn creepy, if you ask me. And that happens to be one of them. And what made it, and I just really realized it during that little break, we were, you know, going through the lyrics of this song, and something is mentioned, and ladies and gentlemen, keep in mind our main topic of this evening, that being Ed Gein. He talks about, he asks the question in the lyrics, so am I inside you, Mom? Or something to that extent. You have the lyrics right there. Go ahead and again, this is creepy.
Here I go again, up and down alone. All my friends went home years ago. All my toys are broken, and so am I inside Mom? The carnival has closed. Years ago. I'm a little boy. No, I'm a great big man. No, let's be a little boy for a little while longer. Maybe an hour. No, Stephen, we have to go back now. Isn't that our mom calling? Stephen, come home. Mother, Stephen, come home.
That is creepy.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely out there. I mean,
it really is, and you know, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Alice Cooper. I think hard rock, metal, and horror just kind of go right along.
I would agree.
We go to a festival in Louisville, Kentucky, every year. Louder Than Life.
I love it.
It's such an awesome time, and of course, it's, you know, a lot of metalheads, and you have different types of people, but I would like to think most of them's filled with metalheads. But anyway, they all seem to like horror. It's really, I haven't met a metalhead that says, ooh, horror, no, I don't like blood and guts. You know, I mean, who are you? You like metal? But, you know, so anyway, at that, you know, Alice Cooper, Welcome to My Nightmare, lots of songs. We're going to hear a couple more during our next couple breaks that we may take during this here podcast. Let's get in to the movie of the week that we're going to discuss. And that, as I mentioned, is going to be Leatherface. That came out 2017. Very, very mixed emotions. Very much on the fence on this one. I was extremely intrigued by the beginning. Oh, first of all, I want to say, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this movie, you may want to fast forward in the podcast, because we are going to talk about things that may spoil your movie. If you have seen it, continue on, good freaks and ghouls. The very first thing I want to mention is the beginning to me was very intriguing. Again, as I mentioned with serial killers, I like to know how they got there. I also like to know that when it comes to some of my favorite horror villains on film, on the screen, I like to see how they got to where they were. Were you intrigued? Or are you that kind of guy too, man?
Yeah, man. I
know you.
I love the beginning.
Yeah.
And again, in the same breath, I hate it. It was an unfair tease. Like it started out so high and then dropped dramatically.
It really was a tease, man. And you know, it very soon dropped off. You know, one thing that I did like in the beginning, and that was that one of Jed, who is the very young Leatherface in the beginning of this movie, having a birthday party. It's his birthday. He gets his first chainsaw. Baby's first chainsaw.
I remember when I wanted my first chainsaw.
I do too, man. I actually wanted, you know, knives with, you know, Michael Myers and Captain Spaulding. Oh, I have those. Anyway, his very first chainsaw, it was his birthday, young Jed, a.k.a. Leatherface. He's got an older brother that I have to say, and if you're still listening because you've seen this movie and you don't want it to be spoiled, or you don't care if it's spoiled because you've already seen it, you know what I'm talking about. And I cannot think of his name, his character's name. I cannot remember it. And maybe if you can find that for me, Murphy. Murphy's Law over here. Anyway, he looks remarkably like an inbred backwoods redneck version of Matthew McConaughey. Am I lying, Murphy?
No, sir. No, we're not.
And one of the funniest things, and every time we watch this movie, the sheriff comes up. He, you know, to the house. He's arrested. I'm going to call him, you know, McConaughey Jr. here. When they arrest him, they come up and they're, and I can't even remember what the cop says. The sheriff says, he says something like, what's he say? Do you remember? I can't remember. But anyway, no, I mean, my response would be, you know, and it always is every time we watch it was like, it'd be a lot better if you had a joint. Or no, it was a say, man.
You got a joint.
be a lot cooler if you did. That's right. Be a lot cooler. I'm stepping all over you there with wrong information right there.
You just got to keep living, man.
Yeah.
L-I-B-I-N.
That's great. Yes. But he does. Anybody who has seen this movie will know exactly what we're talking about. Watch it again and look at this guy and tell me he does not look like a backwoods, inbred, redneck version of Matthew McConaughey who likes to eat people and wear their faces. I don't know if he did or not. Anyway, you know what I think that this movie should have been called? Teens Escape Mental Institution and Kill.
That would have been a better... It would have changed the movie dramatically.
At least I wouldn't be disappointed with what I saw.
Right.
As we mentioned, you know, as you mentioned, actually, the very beginning, the first 10 minutes or so, okay, yeah, it was like, cool, all right, we're going to see young Leatherface grow up to be what he is, and maybe it's surrounded by his family and show background of the family and all this and how he grew up and what happened in that family, which we saw a glimpse of in the beginning.
A glimpse. This is what it should have been called, a glimpse of Leatherface.
That's great. No, it really should have. I mean, as you can tell, ladies and gentlemen, we are not too pleased with this movie. And I'm a huge original version of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
As well as
love me some 70s yes. horror. You really did a glimpse, which brings me on my next point. You lose sight of Leatherface. He escapes your mind for the majority of the movie until about the last 10 to 15 minutes of the movie. Then everything starts to come around. And that lost me. That's why I say it should have been called, you know, Teens Escape from Mental Institution and Kill. Because that is the majority of the movie. You lose sight and face of Leatherface. It's like, I thought this was a Leatherface. What I really also didn't like, because with a title like Leatherface, you expect some blood.
Yes.
We looked at that and counted. How many times did we count that you actually seen a gory situation? And it really, some of them really weren't as gory as they probably could have been. How many? We had about three, four maybe? I think it might have been. I'm not sure.
I think there was a few more than that. I would say like at least six.
Okay. So maybe a half dozen in an hour and a half movie, a half dozen scenes of gore and horror. And I'm a fan of that kind of stuff.
The diner scene, I mean, that was...
That was okay, but it had nothing to do with Leatherface.
No, it didn't.
Nothing. I mean, all the horror scenes, other than at the end, okay, where you actually realize this is Leatherface... Okay, then you see actually Leatherface turn around and actually kill someone. But you only got 15 minutes of the movie left. I mean, it was a huge disappointment. I think the storyline was absolutely horrible. I don't think because people are focused on these mentally ill teens escaping and, you know, kind of sounds a lot like Natural Born Killers. And, oh, there's a little bit of Devil's Rejects in there, too. I got a glimpse of all those movies, as I know you did, too. Am I right?
Most definitely.
Yeah.
A lot of the scenes, some of the characters, you know, their actions and the way they spoke, which, I mean, I understand you'll see that in almost any movie, but it just...
Especially if there's a southern twang to a voice, it can sound a lot, but some of it was uncanny.
But the fact that, you know, the entire movie, except for 5 minutes in the beginning and the last 15 minutes, was completely unrelated to actual Leatherface, so...
It was.
I mean, it makes the movie, you know...
Boring.
Exactly.
It really loses you. I think what they could have done... I'm not a director or producer, and don't write screenplays, you know, things like that. I'm not qualified really to, you know, make a movie. But if I was to offer a suggestion on how I think the storyline should have kind of gone, maybe we focus more on, as I mentioned briefly earlier, the upbringing of Leatherface.
Right.
Through the years, let's show him as a teenager and not in a mental institution where you don't even know who the hell he is, because the storyline in this movie was they changed their names because the state instituted a law to take kids away from parents that were deemed to be, you know, a danger to these children, and then they changed their names. So you don't know who the hell you're looking at through most of the movie.
Not just that. I mean, he's like, what, 9 years old, I would say? Like, it was like his ninth birthday party or something?
Yeah, probably not. Probably, give or take. Yeah.
It fast forwards, yeah, and he's damn near 18.
It's 10 years later. Right. And you don't know who's who. I mean, I don't know. All right. That was that topic right there. We're going to take another small break. And as I promised... a little more Alice Cooper from that album, which actually falls right after the song that we just played years ago, Steven. This is another very creepy song. It's a little long for the break, so you're probably not going to hear the whole thing. But we'll give you a taste if you're any kind of metalhead or Alice Cooper fan. You've already got it, and you'll figure it out. This is Night of the Living Dreads with Otis B. Dreads, myself, and Malice Murphy. We will be right back.
I don't want to see you go. I don't even want to be there. I will cover up my eyes and pray it goes away. You only lived a minute of your life. I must be dreaming. Please stop screaming.
I don't like to hear you cry. Don't know.
how deep that cuts me. So I will cover up my eyes, and it will go away. You've only lived a minute of your life. I must be dreaming, please stop screaming.
Night of the Living Dreads, the podcast, nightoftheLivingDreads.com. GoreHoundsOfHorror.com is actually Night of the Living Dreads podcast, new home. You can go there, but please be aware, that website is a work in progress. The owner of that website asked me to at least mention that. Don't go there expecting big things right now. But it is up. You can also check them out on Facebook. Just, well, simply search Gorehounds of Horror and you will find them. Great bunch of people over there. And we are very excited here in the insane asylum we call a studio. And we're very excited to be working hand in hand with them. And it's a, well, it's kind of a marriage made in heaven. Anyway, right before the break, we were talking a little bit, you know, about the movie Leatherface. And that was, you know, not really a remake, but kind of a
prequel.
A prequel, exactly. And I have a, as I mentioned earlier, I have an article. This is from bloodydisgusting.com, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise carving out television history with new film deal. Now, apparently they are finding themselves a different home, and I want to, I'm going to read a little bit of this. Bloody Disgusting was the first to tell you that the rights to Halloween had escaped the clutches of the Weinstein Company and Dimension Films, which led to Blumhouse and Universal Pictures aligning to bring us the new entry this coming October. Now we're hearing that Leatherface is in search of a new home again. And I guess last October, Lionsgate released Leatherface, a prequel, which is the one we were just speaking of, to Tobe Hooper's The Texas Chainsaw Massacre that was produced by Millennium Films. Sources told us before the film's release that the rights had been turned back over to Kim Henkel, writer and producer on the 1974 slasher classic and also director of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation, which came out in 1994. So, long story short, I don't need to read this for verbatim. You can find this article, again, at bloodydisgusting.com, or you can go right to nightoftheLivingDreads.com, and you can find it there, and then link back to Bloody Disgusting to read the full article. But, let me cut the small talk here. What do you think about, because as we mentioned before the break, yeah, the ones after the original just kind of, I don't know, really stuck. Yeah. Not good. Not good is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I would have to agree. Like, I'm pretty disappointed in every remake that they've done.
Exactly.
And but you know, I'm on the fence. You know, it more than likely will be shit.
Yes,
but
yeah,
there's still that possibility.
A man
can
dream. A horror fan can dream, right?
Yeah, I like to be optimistic.
You know? I like to try to think that maybe with the right actors, the right company, the right backing for a TV series. I'm not so hip on the TV series. That's what has me on the fence. No, but I wouldn't mind seeing a decent remake that followed the original as closely as possible, and not like we've seen here, you know, within the past 10 years.
Well, I mean, with the TV series, I mean, if it was on a certain network, you know, given, you know, a more risque or not really risque, but just a
network that would allow you to do
get
those,
gory,
yeah,
and
get gory, yeah, because standards and practice don't like that.
Like Showtime or something like that.
Sure.
If they pick that up, you know.
To where you had to buy the channel or whatnot, and you know what you're going to get when you buy the channel, so it's nobody's, you know, fault but your own if you buy the channel and then see something that happens to be overly gory. Or is that even possible? Overly gory?
I mean, I guess there's a limit for everyone, but...
I guess I... But... Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I like you. I'm about this. I think a TV series would probably suck. I'm not too hopeful in the TV series. Again, a remake of the film. Again, done right with the right actors, and I think, you know, done in the right way, and not like Leatherface, the prequel in 2017. Not like they did. So. One real quick article, because, you know, Murphy over here, he knows I like collectibles. I like horror collectibles. I have Freddy Krueger action figures still in the case, sitting out, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I got Leatherface out there. I got just all different kinds of things laying around that lets people know I love horror. This is one that I'm really excited for, and this is coming very, very soon. Funko, which is, I guess, is a toy manufacturer or just a brand, Funko to release Savage World Horror action figures this September.
Man, these things look pretty damn cool.
They are really, really cool. And again, these articles that we are talking about will be listed, boom, in the description right below. So if you want to go back and see for yourself or spread the good cheer, they'll be there. And real quick, and what's great about this is because it takes me back to my childhood. It combines what I love now, what I feared more, but still love being horror when I was a kid. But I also had a love for action figures, like a lot of boys growing up, you know, G.I. Joes, He-Man. Now, if anybody old enough to know what He-Man figures look like, this is exactly what these guys look like. There's Leatherface, there's Jason Voorhees, there's Freddy Krueger, Pinhead, and Michael Myers. And they look pretty damn cool. Real quick, seemingly inspired by the muscular forms of the Masters of the Universe figures and other TV characters that could be found on store shelves in the 80s, Funko's Savage World Horror action figure line features ripped versions of iconic horror villains, and with biceps like these, they could probably just rip their potential victims in half instead of using sharp accessories. The Savage World Horror action figures will arrive on store shelves this September, giving you plenty of time to add these beefed up horror icons to your Halloween decoration displays. These are absolutely awesome, and trust me, I will be Googling this here in about the next week. As soon as it hits September, I'm getting me some of these. These are, what would you get these? Do your little boys, do they get into, I know they like some heavy metal. These kids are awesome, folks. Trust me. Do they like scary things? Have you just kind of limited it to, you know, like kids' version of scary?
Yeah, kids' version of scary, man.
You show them Beetlejuice?
Yeah, they like Beetlejuice.
They like Beetlejuice.
And, you know, they're not really afraid of that. They like Goosebumps.
Right.
But sometimes, you know, they're temperamental and they... Oh, this scares me.
Right, right. When actually, you know, it really don't. Yeah. I bet you they would love this kind of stuff, though. You think they would like that?
Yeah, I think they would be cool with, you know, Michael Myers, maybe...
Michael Myers looks badass. I'm just saying.
Maybe Jason.
Jason, yeah.
The other ones might scare him, Leatherface and Pinhead. And...
I'm going to try and get them all, because that's what I do. I'm a little bit of a kid when it comes to that. And I'm going to try and get every last one of them. I want to get into a little bit of egg game before we, you know, we take a small break, because that is our main topic. But every once in a while, we have to take a break, relax our vocal cords, and take a drink, have some coffee, you know, get a glass of water, and just relax for a couple minutes, because what we're getting into is some pretty heavy stuff. You might want to be aware that what we're going to be talking about is gruesome. It's disturbing. But that's what this show's about. That's why this is the horror podcast you will ever, ever need. Ed Gein, you know, inspired, as probably a lot of the listeners already know, inspired movies. His murders inspired movies, probably, and my guess is because this happened in mid to late 50s. I can't remember offhand if there was any other person who did the things that he did before that time here in the United States. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess without it being in front of me. That's right. No facts, Otis, is what you're going to call me now, because I don't have the facts to support this, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say he was the first here in the U.S. to go to those measures. Not the first serial killer, but the first one to take the measures of grave robbing, skinning alive, and going to the measures that he did. Ed, I want to start out with a popular limerick that I'm sure was circulating around Plainfield, Wisconsin. This is circa 1958. There once was a man named Ed who wouldn't take a woman to bed. When he wanted to diddle, he'd cut out the middle and hang the rest in his shed. This was a limerick. It is kind of humorous.
I mean, you got to find humor in something.
You absolutely do. And we are two guys that can do that, because I find it kind of humorous. But I guess the people that wrote it or came up with it, I'm sure it was a conglomerate of townspeople in Plainsfield after all this happened. You know, they didn't really see it as being that humor. It was very serious to them. You know, this was the guy next door. This is one that babysat, you know, our children. You know, not the village idiot, but just, well, you knew he was a little off.
Right.
But maybe not to the extent that we're getting ready to talk about. But we are going to take a quick break, gather our thoughts. This is some deep stuff. Ed Gein is what we're talking about. Don't go anywhere. Our last song, and how ironic, our last Alice Cooper song, which does not actually come from the Welcome to My Nightmare album. It comes from the album Killers. This one you're going to hear a little bit of, not the whole thing, because we do have, you know, a time that we're looking at here. Dead Babies is the name of this little clip you're going to hear coming up. We'll be right back. Night of the Living Dreads, nightofthelivingdreads.com, gorehoundsofhorror.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Little Betty ate a pound of aspirin.
Wisconsin. Edward Theodore Gein was born August 27th, 1906, to Mother Augusta Crafter and George P. Gein. He also had a sibling by the name of Henry. This is a very strange man, a very strange family. A very hard upbringing, and I will constantly beg the question, being a devil's advocate, was it completely Ed Gein's fault of what had happened? We have talked about this before. I really think it's a combination, but let's get into his family. We'll dive into his mother later because she is the center focus, I believe, of his issues. His father, George Gein, was known to be a very violent alcoholic. Where the violence landed, do we really know that, Murphy? I mean, we can only assume that it came towards his mom, but I haven't read anything myself to concrete the fact that it happened also to Ed and his brother Henry.
I would assume it was all three, given the time period.
I'm kind of swaying that way as well. But there's really nothing that I have read. I mean, if he was violent to someone in the family. That we can rest assured, because every resource I've looked at concerning Ed Gein's father, he was a violent drunk.
It wasn't just the family dog.
It wasn't always the family dog, okay? Mom didn't accidentally bump her head into the doorknob again. His brother, his dad died in 1940, so Ed was 30 something years old. 34 years old.
34 years old, yeah. Yes.
And so, don't know how that affected him. If he was a violent alcoholic, I'm sure maybe his dad's death didn't. Maybe he was glad to see him go. If there was a lot of violence going on. His brother, on the other hand, and I'll let you tell the story of the brother. His brother Henry, he ended up dying as well, and I don't have his the date that happened in my notes here, but I know there could be some, you know, different things, different ways that Henry could have died. Tell us the story, Murphy, about what happened that day.
Well, Henry and Edward were out burning the marsh, their vegetation marsh,
mm-hmm.
Which is a typical thing that,
sure,
you know,
every
farmers
year, seasonal thing, right?
Right, that they would clear it out that way, especially in that time period. And, you know, reports say that, you know, the fire got out of hand and Ed and Henry got separated. And given in such a panic, Ed abandoned his brother, out for himself, ran out to go get help.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Henry died. So the strange thing was that he said that he was separated from his brother.
Couldn't find him. He lost track of his brother in the fire.
and led the detective, or not the detectives, the police, but the police and the paramedics and everybody straight to his body.
Straight to his body. No hesitation. Took him right there. So I guess it's a case of lost and found. That is kind of strange, though. Now, the autopsy.
Maybe the smell of burning flesh, you know.
That's a very good point, though.
Led him to it.
You know, because he was that kind of guy. That's a good point. You never mentioned that before. Why are you springing this up on me now?
Just a random
podcast? Just a random thought.
Burst of...
Yes. A random burst of yes. And you could be on something there, my friend. Because I have a theory as well. Because, see, the autopsy... The medical examiner, I'm assuming, stated that there was some blunt trauma force done to Henry's head. There was some bruising on his skull.
Yes.
Now, those who are, of the mind that Ed did this, and there's reason to believe that maybe he did, because after his father... passed, and we'll get into how his mom was, but let's real quick for the, sake of time and staying on topic. Henry started bad mouthing his mom kind of behind her back, but Ed heard this. Ed was the Norman Bates of 1958 at the, early 50s and whatnot. He did not like this. So it's thought those who think that Ed did this figure, well, he was angry because his brother was bad-mouthing his mom. So he hit him over the head once the fire got out of control, knocked him out. Of course, Henry, unable, being knocked out to save himself from the fire and burned alive. That's the theory that those who think that Ed did it. Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate. What if in a panic, Ed does leave, he loses sight of his brother, what he said was true, loses sight of his brother, gets scared, runs to get help, police, fire department, whoever. Now his brother, Henry, who is also very scared in the middle of this, what I can only imagine, like a brush fire because it's spreading rapidly. And as he's running, trying to get away, he falls, hits his head, tree stump, rock, whatever. There's your blunt force trauma, and there's your bruising. So there's different ways to look at that. I think most people in Plainfield were thinking Ed did it. I think that's the general consensus. What do you think?
No, I think he did it.
You think he did it?
Yeah.
Really?
I think that that there was some jealousy. There could have been jealousy there, even though that
right
that Henry was bad mouthing Augusta. Mm-hmm. Don't know what he was saying. Maybe she was.
From now on, we call Augusta Mother.
Mother.
Because that it's creepier to do it that way. Plus, she's more like Mother Bates.
Maybe he called her mother bitch,
Oh, Henry. Yeah. I was going to say, I don't think Ed would. No. Let's get into his mom real quick, because some movies, and I'm not sure if I mentioned this earlier. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't, but I will now. Some movies that were kind of based after the whole incident, loosely, part of it, whatever, have been three pretty big movies. Silence of the Lambs, Wild Bill putting the mammary vest on the torso and dancing around and being all freaky and LGBT like, and I have nothing against, please don't get all on me on that one, but
would you fuck me?
Oh, that's
I'd
right.
Fuck me.
That's right. Yeah.
I'd fuck me hard.
He's got that really deep voice. Would you fuck me? Anyway, boy, we got way off topic there. Parental advisory. Psycho, which as we will find out, and those who are not familiar with that game will find out for the first time, and if you do know about that game, this is common knowledge. And of course, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Let's talk about Mother Bates. Now, the problem with Mother Bates and me, and you know, she put her kids through hell, but what she also did was stay with a violent drunk. Why? Because of religious beliefs. Religious beliefs and her faith dictated she would not get divorced. Because you do this in God's eyes. She was a devout, fanatical Lutheran.
Overly fanatic.
And that would, you know, her faith did not allow her to take and get divorced. So she stayed with this man until he ended up dying, as we mentioned, in 1940. Now, we mentioned her fanatical religious beliefs, again, being a Lutheran, which I don't hold that, again, you have different religious beliefs than me, so
that is true.
You just have to understand me, because I may say something, you know, that may be interpreted as derogatory towards maybe a religious sect or a, you know, gay, bisexual, whatever. I don't care what you do with your life. I'm very much, you know, one of those, hey, whatever gets you through the night, whatever keeps peace in your heart, you know what I mean? So I just want to throw that out there, because sometimes I may say things that may rub people the wrong way, and I just want to know, don't put a label on me. I'm not a racist, I'm not a homophobe, I'm not the Antichrist, although I could be. But we'll save that for another show. His mother was very much a religious fanatic. And she preached this to him, Murphy. She preached it to their kids every single afternoon, it stated. Every single afternoon, they sat down. And it wasn't like happy, you know, religious Bible, passages. These were doom and death and murder from the Old Testament that she would read and drill into these kids' heads. That is a little strange. And not only that, she was trying to get that religious hold on her kids' mind, and also that physical hold on their physical person, because they did not leave the farm except to go to school. When they were done with their studies, they came home, they worked on the farm, they got their religious indoctrination from mommy and Mother Bates, and that was their life. And this, going back to when I mentioned that, you know, Henry bad-mouthing his mother, it's because of that. He did not agree with her view of the world. She thought the world was just, you know, how did she put it? Innately immoral, which I can almost understand that.
Yeah.
That's not really far-fetched. Look at where we're living, ladies and gentlemen, when pedophilia is, you know, just a norm now.
Love is love.
Love is love. And, you know, also, you know, an ass-whipping's an ass-whipping. But anyways, yeah, so we are, right now, innately immoral. She said the only acceptable sex was that of sex that was for the means of reproduction.
Baby-making.
Pop them out, baby. Pop them out.
She was crazy.
She really was.
So turn away outsiders. No outsiders. No friends.
Right. Yeah. Kept Ed very much. Well, I don't want to say antisocial, although he was socially awkward because he never learned how to deal with people.
Right. Very
because
very
of that
shy.
Stranglehold. Right.
Very shy.
Very shy. Often made fun of. In school, which did not help, because he so much, I believe, wanted friends at that age, because it's just a natural process. When you're a young boy, you're going to school, you want to make friends, you know, and if you don't have friends, you're called a loser, you're this and that. Yeah, most of the time, he all he did was chores. That's it. Now, after Henry Well, I'm sorry. After their father dying, as I mentioned again, Henry started bad-mouthing his mom. I guess now he could get away with it. Maybe, you know, old drunk pappy didn't like him bad-mouthing their mom. Okay, which I get too. I wouldn't stand for it. I know you wouldn't stand for the boys bad-mouthing their mom. And that, I think, fueled a lot of Ed's disdain for his brother, which points towards maybe Ed did do this in the woods. Okay? It was definitely there. The angst was there. But after Henry died, it was just him and his mom. Now we're getting into a Norman Bates kind of thing. You know, Norman, according to the movies, poisoned his mom with tea. Okay. That's what they call matricide. That is not what happened here. You want to talk a little bit about his mother? Because it wasn't long after Henry, less than 2 years, December 29th, 1945, his mom dies.
That is correct.
That's when everything went downhill.
I mean, things could have been going downhill before that. I mean, That's very true. After Henry died, I believe he pretty much had free, you know.
He had his mom all to himself.
Right. I mean, he was able to do whatever he wanted because she was elderly. She was disabled.
Yeah.
You know, she, you know, completely relied on him for everything that she would need.
Sounds like a little Norman Bates there, don't it?
Yeah, I mean, when she died,
the resemblance is uncanny between the two.
She died, he said that he had lost his only friend and his one true love. And to me, that's a little
creepy.
Incestuous. You know?
It very much is. And, you know, his best friend, his one true love. Well, maybe he just felt that nobody could love him like his mother could. That no matter who he thought he was falling in love with, whether it be another female, nobody, kind of like in Psycho. You know, Norman would find attraction to these women. He would start feeling that attraction. And then the little voice in his head, Mommy, would come up, you know, Mother Bates would come up in his head. And, you know, next thing you know, he's stabbing him in the fucking shower. Maybe Mother Bates was Norman's only true love because, hey, what did he say in the movie? Hey, there's no greater love than a mother's or something to that extent. Right. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But... So maybe that may not be strictly incestuous. I know it would add to the intrigue of the story, but I don't think it really is that. I think it's more of a Norman Bates, like you see portrayed in Psycho, and even in the sequels afterwards.
I just don't see how, you know, the sick. Some of the sick things that he wanted to do, you know, dress up like his mother. Mm. And, you know, like, I don't see how that can't be accounted as sexual.
Well, we don't know what was going on in his head, so maybe you're right. Maybe it was for him. Maybe he got sexual pleasure out of doing some of the most grotesque and horrible things that gives him sexual arousal. You know, that's quite possible. It's said that he would put the skin of women on, not his mother, but women. Oh, sorry there. I smacked the microphone. Getting excited here. He would put the skin of women on the face and the mammary vest and, you know, go out in a full moon. And, you know, some say he was, you know, trying to be, you know, like his mother.
Well, I also think, you know, with the complete isolation, that the only woman that he could be sexually attracted to, that the only one he would ever see would be his mother.
That's very true. That's a damn good point. You're on your game tonight, my friend.
And just because she's religious doesn't mean she's not sadistic.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, people use religion as, you know, as a cloak to cover up their sick, you know, pedophile, you know, tendencies or
right,
whatever.
Right, right.
You know, with churches, you know, it really doesn't matter what a person says they believe, you know, when you don't see what they do behind closed doors.
Now, it wasn't until Gain was, Gain, the detergent, Gain was 39 years old. His mom had passed due to a series of strokes. So she was having multiple strokes, which, you know, ended up killing her. 12 years later, Gein was suspected in the disappearance of Bernice Worden. Now, there was some evidence going on there that he had talked to Bernice at the hardware store. Right. He was asking for what?
Some antifreeze.
Antifreeze, yes.
The day before.
The day before, in front of Bernice's son, Frank Worden. And that kind of led them after the disappearance, because Frank had gone out hunting, this story is. Ed goes into the hardware store. He comes in with a single shell to a .22 caliber shotgun. He asks Bernice for, that's what I got, rifle.
Yeah,
.22 caliber rifle. Sorry, you gun enthusiast. My bad. But he comes in. He asks Bernice for some antifreeze. As she's going to get the antifreeze, he loads the one shell into the rifle and shoots her a point blank range in the head. I believe is all I found is she was shot close at close range.
Correct.
Okay. So when Frank comes back from hunting, he stops by his mom's hardware store, finds a puddle of blood. How did Ed get into the hardware store? Well, he came in through the back, which surprised Bernice. At any rate, the cops go there, and admittingly so, they admit that they, you know, broke the law that they were supposed to enforce by breaking into his shed. At the time, Ed Gein was at the grocery store. He was, you know, why would you go to the grocery store? Ed Gein, I mean, in the grocery store. Isn't that kind of weird? I guess if you need condiments for your fingers, lady fingers.
Further into the story,
sure.
You know, when we talk about where they found the heart and everything, you know, he was probably getting some extra food to cook up with his dinner that night.
Because you can't live on heart alone.
Right.
You're going to need maybe a veggie or two.
Some potatoes, maybe some green beans.
I'm sure he probably made his own head cheese. At any rate, when the cops finally go in there and the sheriff department finally goes into a shed, they find Bernice hanging upside down. She has, she's decapitated. She is what Hunter's term would use, dressed out. She was cut, ribcage split. There was nothing in her. Her hands were tied and hung from the ceiling. Her feet were on what they called a crossbar, which was actually suspended from the ceiling as well. So that's how she was hung up. They were horrified. That was all the probable cause they needed. They proceeded into his house at that point.
And that's where the fun started.
And that is where it really gets disturbing, because, again, we're talking about the mid to late 50s. 1957, 1958 is, you know, the years that we're dealing with here. Probably unheard of what they found at that time. Now, I'm going to run through. I got a little list of some things that they found. Some of it I was not privy to. Human skulls on the corner post of his bed. I did not know about that one. So decorations on his, the little post on his bed. He had human skulls on. Did you know about that one?
No, but it gives a whole new meaning to bedhead.
Ooh, bop, bop, pow. That was good. Human skin upholstered on chairs. And, of course, the infamous lampshades we've all heard about when it comes to Ed Gein. I'm sure you know about that. Human skull caps used as soup bowls. He would cut the tops of the skulls off and use them as bowls. Yeah, so maybe he was at the grocery store getting soup to put in his skull bowl.
That's very, very possible. I wonder if he had certain bowls for certain type of meals, or if he had a particular favorite bowl that he would always use.
Kind of like, you know, like a 5 or 6 year old would. I can't eat out of that. I have to have my SpongeBob bowl. He's like, I can't eat out of that. I have to have that random woman that I dug up last night. I have to have her head. It's a special occasion. You mentioned the human heart. There was some little bit of controversy about that. And all of the deputies' reports, they stated as finding this heart in a saucepan in the kitchen.
You getting hungry? Obviously, there?
Yeah, I am. I'm drooling. I'm getting a little
that sounds hungry. Sounds so good.
So, man, I am hungry. Coffee's chewing right through my gut. But crime scene photographers claim that this heart was in a bag.
Right. That's what I had originally read.
Right. So,
but they said it was in a bag next to the stove. Either way, he was getting ready to cook it and eat it. That's what I believe.
Come on, Rodney, have a heart. The head of Mary Hogan, who was a tavern, she worked at a local tavern. Actually, she was the owner of this tavern. She was found, her head was found in a paper bag. That seems to be pretty consistent with all of the reports that I've read that was true. No. But here's the thing about the heart, man. Does it really matter where it was found? Was it in the damn house? Yes. Okay, most people don't have human hearts laying around. Although this guy right here, thanks to my good friend Joshua Allen on Facebook, look him up if you want some things that, you know, if you like, if, not like, but if you're into the horror and the Ed Gein, which of course you're into the horror. You like blood, violence, freaks of nature? Of course you're in the horror. Check out my buddy Joshua Allen on Facebook. Type that in. Check out what he does. Amazing artist. I'm actually getting a lampshade that's made out of what looks like human skin.
And a hat.
And a baseball hat as well. Check him out. I told him I would shout him out. And, of course, I try to be a man of my word. Ceiling light poles to turn your ceiling fan on. Made of human lips. That was another one I hadn't heard of. We mentioned the mammary vest that was made from a woman's torso. Nipple belt. We got a nipple belt on hand. I actually would wear a nipple belt. I don't know what that says about me, but I would totally wear a nipple belt. And socks made from human flesh. Ah, talk about foot fungus. Can't see myself doing that one. Now, aside from the lampshade, one of his most notorious creations were that of the shrunken heads. What do you know about that, Murphy?
Okay, yeah. So there was this 16-year-old youth, whose parents were friends of Gein. Mm-hmm. And they attended ball games, movies.
And let me make note, I hate to cut you off in mid-sentence, but let me make note too, again, Ed Gein was kind of revered as a benign human being. He wasn't thought of as being a vicious person who would do such things like we're talking about.
Right.
He babysat kids.
Yes, and I mean, he was well known throughout the community. He was a handyman.
Yeah.
And he would always help people. That's the way he made a living, was, you know, doing odd jobs around the town. And in addition to, he got government farm subsidies.
Right.
And he also sold a large portion of the land.
Of the farm, yeah. He had originally, like 18 acres or something?
No, it was 80 acres.
80 acres.
That he sold.
Oh, that he sold.
Yes.
So they had well over 80 acres then.
Right.
Okay, please continue.
So, you know, these friends, possibly neighbors that was of Gein's, you know, their child would ask him about the shrunken heads, you know, being in his house one time. And he said that those were relics from the Philippines. He had a cousin who was in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, eventually
sent them to him, or mailed them to him from the, you know, they were from the South Seas, like what you just mentioned, right?
But upon police investigation, they determined to be human facial skins carefully peeled from corpses to be used as mask.
Right. How could you mistake a shrunken head for a filleted face that would be used as mask? I don't.
Maybe they were of children. Yeah, you know, I mean,
I don't understand how you know, how much investigation has to go in to determine whether or not this is a shrunken head or this is a mask made of human flesh, is what I'm saying. Very odd.
I mean, maybe he kept, I don't know. I mean, he could have kept the skulls and used them as a mask holder.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, came off that face. It would fit it perfectly.
Okay. I see where you're going there. I see. Yeah, you know, and you know, not only that, right after that, right, you know, Gein admitted to going and grave robbing.
That's correct.
He would go to actually the graveyard where his mother was buried, and whom he is buried with next to his brother and his mother. He would go to that graveyard, and what he would do was take and look at the obituaries, and if he seen a picture of a recently deceased middle-aged woman who he thought resembled his mother, he would find that grave, especially fresh. You got to have it fresh. You know, that skin's got to still have a little bit of elasticity to it. And he would go and dig up the bodies. And then it's reported that, you know, being the nice guy that he is, you know, he may not even take the whole body. He may just need an arm. He may need a vest. You know what I mean? So or the sleeves for his vest, and just take the arm. And that's what he would use to make all of his little possessions, his skin lamps, his, you know, nipple belt, and all of that. It was also said that, you know, when he would dress up in these mammary vests and a woman's face, some people call that insane transvestite ritual. That he was dressing up as a woman, which would be the transvestite. The insane part comes that it's the skin of actual people dressing up as that person. That's how some writers would take and describe these actions. And here's the thing. Gein said, with these bodies that he would dig up, drag back to his lonely farmhouse, which I don't know if we mentioned, had no electric, had no indoor plumbing, was really a shitstorm inside. Completely a wreck. You know, body parts and everything laying around. He said that he never had sex with these bodies. There's a reason. What is that reason?
He said the smell was too bad.
And can you blame him? I don't blame him. I wouldn't have sex with a dead body if it was rotting. And I'd go by Otis.
only if it's rotting.
Only if it's rotting. The smell has to have already taken part. I like rigor mortis. I like me a good stiff.
Yeah, I mean, I heard it makes it tighter.
Ooh, ba-da-pow. So,
back to the grave robbing, though. I mean, he said he only admits to robbing 9 graves,
mm-hmm.
you know, when it was believed that he had made 40 nocturnal visits between 1947 and 1952. you know, 30 of them, he just came out of a daze and just so happened to just wake up after, you know, digging up a grave. And 10 of them, you know, were presumed just because they resembled his mother.
Right. So you have 40 presumed grave robbings, 10 of which are said to be because it resembled his mother. Now, you mentioned, I want to go back to what you said there. You mentioned him, you know, going in a daze. He mentions he was in a daze, maybe didn't realize what he was doing. Again, takes me back to Psycho. It almost seems as if Norman Bates, in the original, of course, takes and kills old girl in the shower. That he was not Norman Bates at that point. He was his mother. He could have probably looked back and called that a daze. And then when he sees what happens, he then realizes, oh man, what has just happened? But yeah, I mean, it's there are so many similarities to.
In fact, one of the graves that he robbed,
mm-hmm.
You know, he was given a description to the authorities of which grave it was and proof that he actually took a body from that grave. They dug it up and opened up the wooden casket and only found a crowbar.
Right. Yeah. Very interesting. So he didn't lie. He was actually completely honest with what he said about the robbing of the graves. He admitted to Bernice and Mary, Bernice Warden and Mary Hogan, which leads me to believe that maybe he didn't lie about his brother.
Well, I mean, it goes back to being in a daze. Maybe it was him, but not him.
You brought up the daze thing.
Robbing the...
Right on.
Robbing the other graves or, you know, possibly killing his brother. Maybe it wasn't him in his mind.
Did you rob a grave? Be a lot cooler if you did. Hey, we're running out of time, folks, but look, let's mention this. Let's mention that there are actually some songs out there for the metal lovers, for I don't know who listens to the Ziggins, but some metal lovers, any Blind Melon fans out there. I know there's some Slayer and Mudvayne fans out there. We have Dead Skin Mask from Slayer, which is said to be about Ed Gein. Of course, on the album Seasons in the Abyss. Yes, Nothing to Gein by Mudvayne. Do you know what album that is?
That is the LD50 album.
LD50 album. Ed Gein by the Ziggins.
And that would be Rusty Never Sleeps.
Rusty
album.
Never Sleeps. And my dog is about to introduce herself. One by, I'm sure most people know, Blind Melon. And that one's called Skin. We actually listened to that during one of the breaks. It's pretty funny / creepy. And what album is that on, my friend?
That would be Soup.
Soup. How ironic, right? Soup.
And Skinned, you know, I mean, he...
Skinned, yes.
He skinned a skull and
yes,
made it a soup.
I have just Skinned down, but the actual name by Blind Melon is Skinned.
Yes,
Skinned. Past tense. You were skinned. Murphy?
Otis.
It has been a great show.
That
I
has.
Hope everyone enjoyed this. Hey, there is more to come in the following weeks. Trust me on that one. I don't think I'm going to give away quite yet what we may be talking about next week, movie-wise. We haven't decided on a movie, but I think we may be on the same track when it comes to what serial killer are we going to talk about next week. I think we're on the same track. Don't let the cat out of the bag yet. I think you guys are going to enjoy our topic of discussion, our main topic next week. Again, this is Otis.
This is Malice Murphy.
And I'm stepping all over his toes.
Ouch.
ouch. And I'm not even wearing steel toes. Again, this podcast is the house podcast, greyhoundsofhorror.com. Check them out. Again, it's a work in progress with these websites. Trust me, you're going to love this. I've been talking to the guy who runs it. Great guy. This is Night of the Living Dreads. But before, I almost forgot. Facebook. Check out Gore Hounds of Horror on Facebook. Type that in. Get in there. Check out this group. Great bunch of people over there, especially if you love horror. Facebook, Night of the Living Dreads. Or you could just quick link it to facebook.com/OtisBDreads. That'll take you right there. Come and like the page. Check out GoreHoundsOfHorror.com, NightOfTheLivingDreads.com. Hey, we're going to see you guys next week. We're going to take us out by one of the songs that we took and just mentioned, Skinned by Blind Melon, is going to take us out of this maiden voyage. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
I'll make a shoehorn out of your shin. I'll make a